there. This is Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. It's a podcast about making things up and making things happen. I love talking to creative people. And today, I have two guests. They're the filmmakers behind the new documentary, Transition, which follows a journalist and filmmaker named Jordan Byron as he goes through gender transformation while embedded with the Taliban in Afghanistan. That's right. There's a lot going on there. And I'm going to be talking to Jordan, the subject of the movie, who's one of the co-directors, along with Monica Villamizar. So they made this movie together while Jordan was working in Afghanistan, making films for outlets like the New York Times. And there's a lot going on in it because Afghanistan was transitioning at the same time Jordan was. And the movie is very rich. It's Jordan's story, but there are some wonderful side, I guess I call them characters, even though they're real people, whose stories illuminate another part of this moment in time in Afghanistan. There's Teddy, Jordan's cinematographer, who was like the heart of the movie. I love Teddy. And also Jordan's Iranian-Canadian girlfriend, who's also a journalist named Kiana. So it's a really interesting tapestry of this moment told through Jordan's own personal transition. So I loved watching the movie and I loved talking to these filmmakers. But before we get to that, I want to remind you that this podcast, Dennis Anyone, is brought to you by me. I do it because I love it. It brings me a lot of joy. I love celebrating creative people. I think art and creativity makes the world go around. But if you want to support the podcast and maybe help me cover my expenses, you can go to DennisAnyone.net. There's a virtual tip jar there. You can also become a subscriber to DNR Studios. I'm part of a group of shows under the Derek and Romaine banner. And for a monthly fee, you get my show early and you get all these other great LGBT shows. So check that out at DNRstudios.com. All right, enough of the plugs. Here now is my interview with Jordan Byron and Monica Villamizar from the documentary Transition. Joining me now from an airport in Amsterdam, as well as a home in Arlington, Virginia, we've got the filmmakers behind the new documentary Transition. We've got Monica Villamizar, who is the co-director and one of the producers, also Jordan Byron, co-director, and the subject of the movie. It's Transition. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, hello.
Thank you for having us.
Monica, why don't you start by saying how you would describe the movie to someone who knows nothing about it?
This is a documentary that follows Jordan Byron. He's an Australian filmmaker who is documenting life in Afghanistan in general when the Taliban take over. And it is a film that tracks his personal journey as he transitions and the identity crisis of a country that's in flux as it spirals out of control and falls into the hands of the Taliban when America retreats after waging its longest war in recent history.
Jordan, I'm curious when you decided that this was going to be a movie and you were going to transition at this time, in this way, in this place. What went into those decisions?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been living in Afghanistan for 5 years already when I finally decided that I didn't want to wait any longer and I was going to start my medical transition. And I started my testosterone injections in Afghanistan with the help of an incredible Afghan doctor. And 6 months after I started my hormone injections, the Taliban took over. So I didn't actually intend that I would be transitioning at the same time as Afghanistan was transitioning. That kind of just happened by coincidence. But yeah, I'd already been living in the country for 5 years when I started my transition.
And when did you decide, oh, let's document this?
I mean, as a filmmaker, you know, we're always looking for stories that are a bit different and then have a different kind of setting and narrative. And so objectively, I was like, oh, okay, we have an Australian trans person that is going to start his transition in Afghanistan. And I thought, oh, that could potentially be something interesting. So I started doing a little bit of filming of the injections with the Afghan doctor and documenting my life a little bit with my friends in Afghanistan. But then when the Taliban took over, shit just got really hectic. And obviously the country was falling to pieces and I couldn't continue any documentation. I could barely even, you know, my transition generally really took a backseat in my life as I was busy being a filmmaker and documenting this moment in history. And then Monica came along and convinced me that we should continue filming. And she brought in the crews and, you know, produced the film and really made it into what it is.
Monica, were you already in Afghanistan or did you go there to work on this?
No. So I had reported in Afghanistan once before when the Taliban took over. I knew the country very superficially. And I wanted to go back and I was like looking for an angle or a story or a reason to go back. And then I was introduced to Jordan by a mutual friend who's an Australian reporter. And I thought the story was extraordinary. And I was trying to convince Jordan, as he says, of really letting us document this and observe him and film the behind the scenes of his life, because he was already filming something with the Taliban and pretty much embedded intimately in their world for the New York Times for a special project. And he said, well, you know, you better come soon because, you know, things are happening here. And I literally, 2 weeks later, I was there with my boyfriend who is a journalist too and knows how to film. And he ended up filming a lot of the scenes with the Taliban because, of course, you can imagine as a woman, I really didn't have any access to this intimate world of a very conservative faction of Taliban that Jordan had been living with for months by then.
Right. That was one of my questions, like who shot those Taliban scenes? Because it wouldn't have been you. So you answered that for me. The Taliban scenes, when you guys are together, that was so eye-opening to me because they were just guys. Like in another incarnation, they're like a boy band. They're charming.
Yes.
They're cute. I'm not going to lie. They're cute. Like it was just really like this is not what we picture when we picture Talibs. And at one point, Jordan, you say you feel more at home there than you do at a gay bar in Sydney. And I found that really profound. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to be with them?
Yeah, it's a very complex idea that, you know, I felt more comfortable in this Taliban village than I have in a queer bar in Sydney. And I think really it has multiple aspects to it. One of those aspects is that because in Afghanistan generally, and especially the Taliban, they have no understanding of LGBTQIA plus people. And so when I went to them and I was presenting as a man, even though I still had breasts at the time and I barely had any facial hair or anything, for those who understand LGBTQIA plus people, you would automatically assume, oh, okay, it's trans person or it's a non-binary person or it's a lesbian or whatever. But these guys just immediately took me as a man. And so I almost didn't even really have that period of transitioning. I just went from being a non-binary person to being a man overnight with the Taliban. And, you know, in Australia, I've had these labels and whatnot that have really haunted me my whole life. But when I was with these guys, I was just Jordan. I was just a man. No labels, no shame, no questions asked. I mean, it's obviously very, very important to highlight the fact that as a privileged Australian person, my experience in Afghanistan and especially with the Taliban is very, very, very different from what an Afghan queer person would experience. First of all, it's near impossible for Afghan trans people to transition. And if they were to be ever found out, then they could either be killed by their family or by the Taliban. So, I mean, that privilege is really a very, very important thing to note. But, you know, these Talibs, like Teddy and I as filmmakers, the Afghan cinematographer that I was embedded in the village with, it's our job to make connections with people, right? As filmmakers, right. That's what we do. And so Teddy and I were living with these guys for months, months and months and months. And, you know, what we see in transition is really a very behind-the-scenes look at these people when their guards are down, when they're just chilling at home. And, you know, they also have that other side to them where they can be extremists and they can be very violent and they can be very oppressive and slash are very oppressive. I mean, their own wives never leave their homes, right? And so I think like being able to present characters in all of their versions, it's a real, as a filmmaker, it's a gift to get that kind of access and be able to portray characters in that way.
Well, they come across in a really three-dimensional way, which I'd never really seen before. And they're so young and kind of have this like, it's like a jocular kind of vibe to them. Was being around them and presenting as a man, was it a sneak preview into like, oh, this is what life could be like in terms of like without the label? Did it give you like a sense of like, oh, this is what it feels like to not have any of that?
This is an awesome question and a question that I've actually not had before. Well done.
Thank you.
Honestly, I don't think so because, you know, at that time, it's so bizarre. Like even now, a year and a half or 2 years later, I still can't quite get my head around that whole chapter and what happened. But the fact that I was really living my best life with a Taliban unit in the remote mountains of Afghanistan, like that's just so insane and again unfair, back to the privilege thing.
Sure.
But I don't think so because I still had breasts at the time and it was very scary. It was terrifying, worried about being caught and whatnot. And so I don't think so because they were accepting a version of me that still wasn't really actualized in the sense that I hadn't had surgery
right.
and I still didn't have facial hair. So it wasn't a very relaxed
time. Vibe. It wasn't, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was great to be accepted like that, yeah. but it was still, you know, it was bloody scary.
Yeah. Monica, you might appreciate this as a filmmaker. You both might. But there's a moment where you're binding your breasts to go out and be with the Talibs. And you know what movie I thought of? Tootsie. I was like, oh, this is like Tootsie, you know, like where Dustin Hoffman's trying to like fake it in this world. The prep that reminded me of Tootsie. I don't know. Maybe a double feature.
Oh, that's amazing. I haven't seen it, but I know the film you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I think, look, for me, before being a filmmaker, I really am a journalist.
Right.
And I thought what I was really interested and really could relate to Jordan in a minor way, not to that extent, but we all sacrifice a lot of personal things when we're embedded and reporting and living in conflict areas. And I think people often don't appreciate that maybe. It's a very, very difficult profession and you really have to love it. It's almost like a duty vocation
yeah.
thing. It takes over your life. Like I didn't have children because of this profession. I know other friends who have to do this or that. You're going through like a lot of drama. Everybody, all of us have internal drama and a process and a journey. And Jordan's was so interesting. And it was a rare case where what he's living through is almost more interesting or as interesting as what he's reporting on. And I think, you know, in a way, I wanted people to know what it's like, you know, what being Kiana feels like. She is also a photojournalist. What being Teddy feels like. He had to bond with these people who he hated in order to get access for the New York Times and show the world with Jordan what was going on. In a way, it's a lot about conflict journalism, too.
Yeah. I had an author on my podcast a few months ago named Tim Murphy. He wrote a book called Correspondence, and it's about a female war journalist in Iraq and the bond that she has with her Iraqi interpreter, who is a closeted gay man. And there's other characters, but those were the heart of the book for me. But that book and your movie paints a picture of what it's the family that you form when you're in those situations and in those places. And in the book, at least, that was almost more comfortable. They'd gotten so used to that world that the idea of going home or something was going to be lost. And that resonated with me when I was watching your movie. And you speak to that a bit, Monica, like the sacrifice and the bond that you feel with the people that you work with. Can you talk a little bit about what it's like to be in those groups of people doing that kind of work?
Do you want to go, Mon?
Yeah, I mean, sure. I think, you know, it'd be great to know your answer too. I think because I did feel, and all these other reporters who've watched the film, they say somehow they relate, you know, there's a lot of relatable scenes like the expat scene, you know, hanging out with fellow reporters.
Right.
Almost like having drinks because everybody's drinking and, you know, it's a lot of stress. It's a lot of adrenaline.
Right. So,
you're trying to process all this trauma, but you're forming very strong bonds with the community of people doing the same as you. And obviously as well with the local community, if you speak the language and if you make an effort to really understand what's going on. So some people do and some people don't as successfully, but it's a very intense feeling because in war zones, everything is heightened.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you live everything, you know, 100 times more or stronger or faster. It's like you're living life, but in a very intense way. And when people go home, but this happens to soldiers as well, I've heard, you know, every day, the banality of life just seems unbearable.
Yeah. That's something that came across in your movie and it was resonant with this book that I just read. You mentioned the characters, or I call them characters, the people that also appear in the movie, Teddy and Kiana. The movie focuses on Jordan's transition, but these two people were so moving to me as part of this tapestry. Teddy has my heart. I'm like, we got to get Teddy out. What's going to happen to Teddy? Like, Teddy, because he's so stuck, right? That's his country, and yet he's done this work. He's formed these bonds, and then the Taliban's taking over, and what's going to happen to Teddy? Can you talk a little bit about Teddy? I don't want to say what happens, but I just want to express how much I loved his journey and how moved I was by it. How did you meet Teddy? How did you first come to meet him?
Yeah, I mean, I'd been living in Afghanistan for 5 years before the Taliban took over, right? And I knew Teddy. The film industry is small in Afghanistan. Even smaller now, the entire film industry was evacuated after the Taliban took over. But I knew him. We used to play basketball together and we used to get really competitive. Like, it was on. Shit got real when we played basketball together. But it wasn't until the Taliban took over and all of the other people that I worked with were evacuated in those early days that I then started working with Teddy. And, you know, it was such a gift, honestly, like, there is no other human that I could imagine going through that experience with other than Teddy. I mean, you know, our real life was so confusing and terrifying and enlightening and so such a profound experience. And doing it with Teddy, who has the courage and the sensitivity to navigate it. And, you know, the film would just not be the film that it is if it wasn't for Teddy. Like, he's just the perfect sidekick. And Kiana, my God, you just can't. Like, when Kiana and I first got together, I was like, come on, man, you can't actually be this kind and beautiful. Like, there must be something that's wrong with you. But, like, 3 years later, I can testify that she's actually just so kind and beautiful and supportive. And, you know, I feel a bit bad because here's this white guy that's, like, living his best life transitioning in Afghanistan at the time that the country is transitioning into its worst self. And as I'm like willingly leaving my womanhood, Afghan women are forcibly being erased. So yeah, but I could never have done it without them. And the film would not be what it is if it wasn't for them.
Kiana, yeah, go ahead, Monica.
Sorry. I love that because in a way for us, the film is really about relationships too, right?
It's a kind of family.
Very, very strong relationships.
Yeah.
That they formed that are very moving, very real. And, you know, it was really a privilege to get to, you know, see a glimpse of this, of these relationships and the depth. It was really beautiful.
There's a scene with Kiana that is heartbreaking to watch now, knowing what we know now, when she is speaking with Afghan women about how they're having to like not go out or their education and all of this. And it was still relatively new. Like they didn't, I think the world was kind of like, well, we'll see how this goes. But man, knowing that it's really so bleak, it's just heartbreaking to watch that scene. Monica, can you talk about that scene? You were there for that one, I assume.
Not the one where they're announcing that the news anchors have to cover their face.
Yeah.
I wasn't there then. I was with Kiana and Jordan a couple of times in Kabul filming like in the frozen lake, which was really beautiful. A couple of other scenes, but I do know the context is exactly as you said. I mean, there was a period where the Taliban were sort of on a holding pattern to see if the international community was going to sanction them fully or not. They were, you know, not on their best behavior, but then they really unleashed their true horrors. And this is one of the first edicts from the Ministry of Vice and Virtue, which says women have to cover their face, even on TV, which is ridiculous. You know, you need to see a woman's or a person's face if you're an anchor, you know, talking about the news. So these younger women were there. And what Kiana said was really smart. And I never saw it like that. But, you know, Kiana is a very smart person. She was like, these girls are going to suffer the most because they did grow up under a regime that was relatively more protective of their rights.
Yeah.
And now they're going to have all that freedom
taken away.
Stripped away overnight.
Yeah.
So for these, like this age group, it was really the hardest.
It was hard to watch. It was heartbreaking because we as the viewers knew what was ahead or some idea of it. Jordan, how did you and Kiana meet?
We met, I mean, we'd known each other for many years in Afghanistan, but like we didn't really click. Actually, if I'm honest, we didn't really like each other that much.
Those, all the best love stories start that way. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, all the best love stories start that way.
Oh my God, hilarious. Yeah, we didn't actually like each other that much. And then it wasn't until, like, no one has said this, but it's actually in a way the Taliban that brought us together and made us fall in love with each other, because it wasn't until the Taliban were getting closer to the major cities and the situation was just getting worse and worse in Afghanistan and the social circles were getting smaller and smaller because all of the foreigners were leaving, right? And then we were forced to actually, like, have a conversation at a small dinner. And then we realized, oh, yeah, you're not so bad. And then, you know, we went to a party and then there's a little ellipsis, which I won't fill in the details of. And then the next thing I know, we're moving to Bosnia.
There it goes. I love it. I was intrigued by the doctor that gave you the testosterone shots in like a meeting room and that he was willing to be on camera. Dr. Yeah. J, are you still in touch with any of these people that you went on this journey with? How are they doing?
Yes. I'm in touch with all of them. Absolutely everybody you see in that film, I'm still in close contact with all of them, including the Talibs. Dr. J is, God, you know, he's just one of those humans that is next level phenomenal. I offered to try and get him evacuated, like, you know, a year or more after the Taliban had taken over, but he refused. Because he said that the brain drain in the country is so severe and especially all of the qualified doctors had all left, right? And he said, you know, if I abandon my people now, then, you know, they really have so few doctors who are qualified and able to perform their medical duty. So he refused to be evacuated and he's still there now. I saw him in May last year and I've known him for 7 years and honestly, I have never seen him so stressed and depressed.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
The situation in Afghanistan, it's just so hopeless, so hopeless. And you know what? Afghanistan wasn't paradise before the Taliban took over, but it's absolutely, it's really hell on earth now. And hope is a form of resistance for Afghans. When they just get cut down again and again and again, it's like the last front line that they have is hope. And even that is starting to wane a bit. So it's really sad.
Was he taking a risk by being in your movie and doing what he did? It seems like to me he would be.
Yeah. Yeah. We showed him the film before we like locked the film. We showed it to him and we asked him, hey, do you want us to blur your face? And he said, no, I'm okay with this. I'm just performing my duty as a doctor. And you know, I have no, I feel comfortable that if the Taliban were to come to me, that I would explain that I was doing my duty as a doctor. And so he didn't want to blur his face.
There's a moment where you burn your bra. And, you know, in the 1970s, that was part of the women's liberation movement, that act. What was that like for both of you, that scene, that moment? What did it represent? And it just had echoes in history for me, but I'd never seen it portrayed in this kind of a story.
You know, can I just, you should answer that, Mon, but I'll just say one thing. Every time I watch that scene, I'm like, it kind of makes me realize how really by that time I was just so unconscious of the camera. Because if I'd have been more conscious of the camera, surely I would have found a nicer bra to burn. Disgusting, ratty sports bra that I chose.
That might be the title of this episode. I always pull a quote out that pops. Yeah, so it wasn't your best. Well, you know what? It went up in flames and that's all it needed to do.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, it relates to what we were talking about, Dennis, about, you know, this amazing family that he formed with other peers, right? And I think what was really fascinating and really charming was that Jordan created these kind of rituals, you know, to explain to people what was going on. And it was a community that took him in, but it wasn't like the LGBTQIA plus community either. It was a community of journalists, of expats, and he was, and they were being supportive as much as they could. But there's sort of these two moments of the film where there are, you know, these kind of marking events that mark something. I'm going to have a party when I get my first testosterone injection, and I'm going to burn my bra when I'm ready to have surgery in Iran. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. When I first read the synopsis of this, I'm like, oh, this is going to be heavy. And then I started watching it, and then I met Jordan, and I was like, oh, Jordan's a blast. Like, this is going to be fun. Like, not fun, but you're a jocular, personable protagonist. And Monica, that must have been part of the appeal to you. Like, this will be an interesting, fun person to go on this journey with.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I mean, I think that's something that Jordan and I both really appreciate, humor, and also be like really admitting that some of these really crazy situations are a bit surreal and they can be humorous. Like, we don't like kind of being told, you know, this is supposed to be stern and serious and you're supposed to feel this or that. We like kind of navigating all these emotions because life is very nuanced. And you can find real humor in horrible situations that could be read as, you know, potentially very tragic and stuff and still are. But this is life in these places.
Yeah. Monica, I know for a lot of documentary filmmakers, you start out thinking you're making this movie and then you're doing it and you're like, oh, it's this movie. Like, what sort of surprised you along the way in terms of like themes or where the story went?
I think like what really surprised me was that how many more themes there were than we initially had sort of like planned for, right? We knew that there was going to be this arc that we were following that was very obvious, Jordan's transition. But then I think like it all kind of got more complicated. The relationships we were noticing were so strong and meaningful and important to kind of give other parameters of what other people in the country were living, for instance, and how other people were feeling the same things. So I think it really evolved into something else that was more complex. I mean, it was really a lot about gender and masculinity and stuff too at the end, which we didn't really set out to make a movie about that. It was literally going to be behind the scenes of a documentarian who was undergoing a really interesting, complex, you know, internal process.
But you also captured Afghanistan when it was going through this, you know, major transition itself. Your mom, Jordan, a delight, should get her own series. I don't know if there's a spinoff.
Yeah.
She appears a few times in the movie and she's so wonderful and supportive. What does she think of the movie? Does she have an agent? What's happening with her career?
She needs an agent. Anybody available to be an agent for an elderly Australian wombat, please give me a message. She loved the film. I didn't let her see the film until it premiered at Tribeca.
Yeah.
So the poor thing, the first time she saw the film was with a huge audience at the premiere in Tribeca. And, you know, she cried all the way through it. She laughed. She was terrified. And she said, as most parents do with who have children living in these kinds of places, they're always glad not to know what's going on at the time.
Yeah.
They are always relieved that they find out after the fact when the child is like out of the country and back home and everything's safe. But Wombat, she's a bloody legend, man.
Yeah.
If anyone needs life advice, give Wombat a ring.
What have you guys observed about the screenings and people seeing it? What surprised you about what they're responding to?
You know, for me, the most interesting thing is that people sometimes don't know how to react to precisely feeling different feelings that maybe they're not used to. That seeing sort of, you know, America's really longest enemy as someone who, you know, as people who may have a human side to them as well, or a more complex side to them as well. And I think it's great because, you know, I think simplifying narratives is a detriment.
I agree.
I think in the U.S., sometimes people want to try to dumb things down and the audience shouldn't have dumbed down content because people are smart.
Right. And maybe it's okay. Maybe it's okay that I have a crush on Mir Weiss. Is that his name? The talent?
Mir Weiss. Exactly.
Yeah. He's a charmer. What surprised you, Jordan, about the way people are responding?
I think what surprised me and what really I'm so relieved about was because, you know, when you read the synopsis, it's very easy to think, oh, my God, this bloody white guy who's going to this very troubled, miserable, oppressed place and is transitioning there, like, what the hell? This is so unfair. And I think there are probably a lot of audiences that go in, although maybe the people who have that assumption wouldn't even dare to watch it. But I think the best thing that people say for me is that they feel that the the narrative of the character's transition into his best self and the country's transition into its worst self, there's a good balance between these two narratives. And like for me as somebody who loves Afghanistan, really, I love that country. It's a phenomenal place, a phenomenal people, very misunderstood. The headlines that we read about Afghanistan in the news are only one dimension of a very, very complex and surprising place. So when people say, like, you know, we're relieved and we're glad to see that the balance between these two narratives is good, that makes me feel really relieved, because the reason that I wanted to make this film in the very, very, very first place was to use my personal story to show the Afghanistan that I love, to show the beautiful, generous, kind, hilarious, loving Afghanistan that I experienced in my time there.
Well, I consume a fair amount of news, but I never felt Afghanistan the way that I did in your film. Like, there were times where I'm like, I can't believe I'm in this room as a viewer. I can't believe I'm privy to this. Did you have moments like that where you're like, I can't believe I'm in this room, or I can't believe this is unfolding before me? It just felt like a level of intimacy that you don't see on the 6 o'clock news.
Yes. My God. Absolutely. Because, you know, like, even, you know, I've been living in Afghanistan for 5 years, and I've met a lot of people who were surprising. So surprising. You know, you're supposed to be a monster, but you're actually just a really ordinary person, or you're supposed to be a hero, but you're actually a bit of a dick. You know, people surprise us all the time. But with the Taliban, it was really a journey of building trust from both sides, right? Like, they had to build trust with us to give us that access, but we also had to build trust with them that they weren't, you know, going to take us to the bumfuck nowhere in the mountains and cut our throats, you know? So that journey was incredibly profound. Yeah, I mean, even now I'm still surprised that, yes.
that you're like, I can't believe I'm privy, I'm watching this, and you're there, and you're part of it.
Yeah.
What about for
and
you, Monica?
Yeah, this is, you know, it's really interesting because I had heard about Jordan before meeting him.
Right.
I, you know, all the war reporters or conflict people, you know, we kind of chat and kind of compete against each other. Who's got this scoop, right? Who's got this access? And I sort of heard from a friend at the New York Times, well, there's this Australian camera DP who's got amazing access to the Taliban. He's filming with them. He's with them. And I'm like, wait, now he's with them now? Like, they took over and he's filming. Oh, he's living, you know, days on end with this unit. So I knew who Jordan, Australian Jordan, was. And then when I met him through my friend, I realized, you know, I realized what he was going through as well. All these checkpoints. I don't know if you felt the stress. I was very stressed and worried for him when I was there. You know, the fact that he's wearing a binder and they're patting him down. I mean, just how much harder everything was for him at that point.
Yeah. I'm surprised the camera wasn't shaking out of nerves. For both of you, in your experience.
It probably was. Wait, it probably was. We just stabilized it
right.
In post.
Exactly. Yeah. You have tricks. For both of you, when did you feel like you were in the most physical danger in your time? Or has that just become part of the day-to-day? You always feel like it.
I mean,
go on.
For me, it was really not nearly as dangerous as it was for these guys, obviously. But I did film a little bit, like the only footage that's like not proper, like, right? Not like horizontal, but the iPhone footage that's like this. We were trying to film undercover in the airport. And I was very scared because I think there's a whole history in Afghanistan about people really not trusting cameras because they've been used as explosive devices.
Sure.
And of course, the Taliban were in control of the airport, so they wouldn't have been happy that we were filming undercover. So I was very scared at that point, and I think I deleted a bunch of the footage accidentally because I was so scared, and obviously we didn't have much at the end. So Teddy, as usual, saved the day and filmed the other part, which is the actual pat down at the airport security, you know, security machine checkpoint.
Yeah. So Teddy was able to sneak and do that. Teddy has my heart. I love Teddy. He is literally a teddy bear. Tell people how they can see your movie. I know it's coming to streaming soon. What's the best way to see it?
It's on platforms already, on demand, Amazon mainly and Apple TV, but all the other like on-demand platforms in the U.S.
All on-demand digital platforms.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All of them.
Jordan, I'm interested. You're an Australian. Did not being an American help you there?
Oh, mate. These guys, like in the village where Teddy and I were with this particular Taliban unit, they've never seen a foreigner before. They don't know what America is. They don't know what Australia is. They don't know what Norway is, what France. They just know foreigner.
Yeah.
They know a cupboard and they know foreigner and that's it. So it didn't really matter what I was. They'd never seen a foreigner before. I'm the first foreigner they've ever seen. They don't really understand what it means, like which country you're from. They don't care. They're all the enemy. Well, they were the enemy before the Taliban became the government.
I bet you're...
I guess there's a funny... Yeah, I think there... Sorry to interrupt. I just remembered a funny anecdote, too,
yes,
that people don't know about, is that I live in Arlington, right? It's in Washington, D.C., close
yep.
to it. So I go to the embassy, Afghan embassy, obviously the previous Afghan embassy, the previous regime, you know, the previous government that was pro-American. And these guys say, we have a bunch of visas. Here they are. You can buy one and try to get in with that. And I'm like, well, no, the new government is the Taliban. They clearly won't accept them. And they're like, if you want to pay, you can have it and try to go in with that. So we actually went in with older visas from the, you know, the American friendly government.
Wow, that's yes. wild. That is really wild.
It is.
Jordan, this may be hard for you to answer because it's such a compliment, but do you think your personal charm helped you do your job? The fact that you're funny and like just so winning? Do you know, did it help you get access, get these people to sort of relax around you?
Oh my God, mate, I love you. Let's be friends forever. I'm going to take you every time I'm trying to flirt with somebody, I'm going to take you with me.
Oh, I think that's not my strong suit, but okay. All right.
Mate, that's, you know, like as a filmmaker, I would say that I always say the most important part of my job is making connections with the characters, right? Because the authenticity of that connection, the intimacy that you have with that character as the filmmaker, it translates into the film. So if you don't actually have an authentic connection, a real relationship, it's going to translate on film and they're not, the audience just aren't going to have that connection with the character on screen. So I would say that, like, you know, as a filmmaker, that's the part of my job that I think is the most important.
Interesting.
I don't know why I would like to think that I'm good at that part of it, but
right.
I don't know.
I think he does have, like, not only the charm, but I've analyzed the strategy a lot, Jordan. I've been analyzing
yeah.
to see what. Because it's really smart. Like, well, first of all, he knew the language too, and that obviously helps, you know, when you can talk directly to someone. But I think the kind of like non-threatening, you know, not competitive and very like open and funny, but also ballsy at the same time. There's a combination that really, I don't think people were just kind of going up to these people and saying, can we have access? Can we accompany you here and there? And I think Jordan literally did that. I mean, right, more or less. Like, hey, can we follow you? Like, you know, to a commander who was a very intimidating man. I mean, I don't know if you remember the taller
yeah.
Taliban.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's not only like the guts and everything, but I think there's a way that the personality does kind of disarm the person where it completely surprises them and, you know, throws them a little bit off. So they're like, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
And also, don't forget my secret weapon, Teddy. Like, Teddy is the secret weapon here. Like, he's a teddy bear, as you said before. Like, he's even better at this than I am.
Well, you guys make a winning team. You're doing work there for the New York Times. How did that affect the documentary shoots? Were they aware that you were telling your own story on the side? Or, like, how did they go together?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they knew that we were making two films, right? They knew that we were making the New York Times film. And then when we started making transition, we told them that we're making a film about my personal life in Afghanistan. Obviously, we omitted the whole transgender bit, but we did say that we're making a film about my personal life, and they were fine with it. But you know what's really crazy? I'm still in touch with all of them, right? And not one of them have asked a single question about either of the films.
And they're out in the world now. Do you think they know about them?
Well, no. No, it's not in their
day-to-day.
nucleus. Yeah, no, not at all.
And how did the
I won't tell them. If they find out about it, then no doubt they will tell me.
Yeah.
Whatever they're going to tell me. But I'm not going to tell them. And when and if they find out, then I'll deal with it then.
I think it's remarkable that you're in touch with them. Because even when people that aren't in war zones leave places, people fall, they drift away, right? Even when they're not under that kind of stress, what is it that keeps you connected?
That's also a really great question. Honestly, I'm not somebody that I don't like, and I think most filmmakers who make films, because films take a long time to make, right? So we end up spending a long time with people. I don't want to just like shove a camera in their face for months on end and, you know, ask them to share their vulnerabilities with me and then just leave. It feels unfair and it feels untrue. And, you know, everything I just said about building an authentic connection, I genuinely mean that. And it's a connection that transcends the 1.5 hours that we see on screen. But, you know, these guys are bloody Talibs. They believe in things that I hate.
Yeah.
Their values are abhorrent. And at the same time, they're friendly and they're generous and they're funny. And, you know, they have good qualities as well. But I want to be somebody who, and friendship, you know, it's a kind of friendship, but it's not like they really know me. You know, they know parts of me, but they don't know all of me. But, you know, it is a kind of friendship and I want to have friends and continue learning from people who are so completely different from me. I find it the privilege of a foreigner who doesn't have to live in Afghanistan as an Afghan woman, for example. You know, I get a lot out of that friendship and I learn and I discover. Teddy is not in touch with them at all. At all, at all. He's changed his numbers. He wants nothing to do with them for obvious reasons. For him, the whole situation was even more stressful, even more dangerous. And yeah, he has no contact.
Yeah, that comes across in the movie. He felt like he was screwed no matter what. It breaks your heart. What was it like for you and Kiana when you were no longer there, when you were in another place?
Mate, I have to run to my
gate. Okay. So here's
I'm sorry.
That's okay. You got to do it. We went longer. All right. I have one final question if you guys have a second to do it.
Can I answer it while I'm walking?
Walk while you're answering. What's a moment from making this movie and your experience there that you know you'll remember 30 years from now? Something you'll always remember for both of you about this experience.
That's a tough one. / I don't even know where my gate is. Hang on, I just need to chill the video for a second. I'm so sorry.
Do your thing. I'll wrap it up with Monica. So
okay. I'm sorry, mate.
No,
that was a great interview. Thank you for having us. That was wonderful.
We're a delight. You're delightful. And here's the last thing I say. From now on, when I hear news about Afghanistan, I'll think about your movie. I'll think about the people, the landscapes, and it will put a picture to something that is just words or an idea. So thank you for that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Right on.
Go team.
All right.
Bye, mate.
Safe flight. So fun talking
to
you.
Cheers, mate.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Monica, I will ask you that final question. What's a moment from this experience you'll always remember, even 20, 30 years from now?
You know what the scene that most, and I'm really sad I wasn't there again, because I'm a woman and it's really hard to be denied access to entire, you know, to doing your job and stuff like that just because you're a woman. That's very hard. But I did, I was there and happy to direct and be able to be in some scenes, like physically behind the camera. But my favorite, most craziest, most surprising scene is the fact that some fighters did not know who Osama bin Laden was.
Yeah. It was remarkable. And
it's remarkable and it's real. They weren't faking it.
They didn't know.
And
somebody had to explain to some of them what happened on 9/11 and the buildings and the skyscrapers. And,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Mir Weiss, who is more educated, slightly older.
Yeah.
But it just shows you the absurdity of war.
Yeah.
You know, generation after generation, when people don't even know what started it. It's just this horrible, ever perpetrating vicious cycle.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that.
That was striking to me as well. Like it was really striking. And then other people said, I think he's a wonderful person, Osama bin Laden, or like that moment was really striking as well. Final question.
Yeah.
Final question. Why do you make movies? Why do you make films?
So I am a journalist. Like I'm a TV journalist, and right. I got into documentaries and filmmaking because I realized that I could spend more time with the characters and go deeper into subjects and just themes.
Right.
And that really fascinated me, and I'm loving it. Like I still do news
right.
here and there, but I think, you know, the narrative techniques that we borrow from narrative films to kind of explore something are really valuable. They open a whole world of possibilities. And I think people want to learn about the world in an entertaining way without, you know, falling into infotainment and all these right. things that I don't really think are particularly interesting, like celebrity, yeah. you know, documentaries or music or soccer or whatever. I think, you know, I'm interested in the world, and I think we should know about the world. I mean, we see what's going on in Ukraine and Gaza and places like people should know more about what's happening. And I mean, you clearly follow the news, and that's great, but not a lot of people do.
Right. Well, and also you don't always get what it's like, what it feels like, you know what I mean? What it looks like. And that's what something your movie did beautifully. So congratulations. It was really fun talking to you, and I hope a lot of people see this movie.
It was great meeting you. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. Thanks again to Jordan and Monica. Check out their movie, Transition. The documentary is now available to stream on all the major streaming platforms. You can rent and buy it and enjoy it. All right, so this happened. I got to go to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. My dear friend Evan has a timeshare there, and he invited me to go down and hang out with him and his boyfriend Luke, and it was a marvelous time. It's really beautiful down there. I did a yoga class on the beach, and it started with the sun up, and it ended with the sun down, which was beautiful. And one of the most fun things we did is we took a food tour through Old Town, the Romantic Zone, and we went to all these different taco stands and got to try different tacos and hear about the history and aqua frescas, and it was just really fun. And two of the other people in our tour group, I got to talking to them, and they're from Arkansas, and they own a nightclub called Maxine's Live, and part of what they offer there are drag shows. And I was like, oh, I love that you're doing drag shows in Arkansas. So I immediately turned into interviewer mode. I could feel like the dopamine hits as I'm like, oh, I want to know more about that. I guess there are worse things you could be addicted to. So anyway, thank you for listening and giving me an outlet for this apparent compulsion that I have. I want to give a shout out to Oscar Rosario for mixing the episodes. My theme music is by Mark Daniels for Placement Music. We'll catch you next time on Dennis Anyone. Bye.